Hello and welcome to Hodgepodge TV. I'm Megan.
I'm Maria.
And I'm Dee.
And this week we will be talking about the HBO Max documentary Woodstock 99. So what did everybody think?
I hated it.
Maria?
It was a really good documentary, I think. I like the way they let the footage, especially from the past, kind of just speak for itself when it comes to the press conferences with the promoters. Mm-hmm. Because then you get to really see them being shitty.
Yeah. Dee, what didn't you like about it?
The thing that got on my nerves about the whole documentary is they kept hinting at one of the big issues with Woodstock 99 was white dude aggression and white dude angst. But then they kept trying to gloss over the fact that it was white dude aggression and white dude angst. They kept being like, oh, well, you have all these angry white dudes. And then they would turn around and be like, but, you know, they were angry for a reason. They all felt like they were together in this one thing. And I was just like, these people are shitty. Why are we trying to just gloss over the fact that these people were shitty?
Yeah, because there's one point they were like, well, they didn't have anything to fight for. And I was like, I feel like there were plenty of causes in 1999 you could have chosen.
Yeah. It was like, I liked it because I didn't know that much. Even though, like, excuse me, even though I was like 14 when Woodstock 99 happened, I remember it happening, but I don't remember much about it because it just wasn't my scene and I wasn't old enough to, like, really appreciate the momentous quote-unquote event that it was.
Oh, I remember it. I was 12 going on 13 at the time when it was going on. And I remember, like, watching MTV and then, like, I went over a friend's house and watched on pay-per-view, like, Woodstock 99 because it was, like, this big music festival and it was, like, something that we were, like, so interested in. Because me and my friend both really, really liked music. And I remember, like, a lot of those... I remember seeing a lot of that stuff live. Like, I remember watching, I think it was the Offspring performance. And I remember Dexter Holland being like, hey, stop grabbing on girls' tits. That's rude.
Yeah.
And so, like, watching it, it was nostalgic in that sense that it was like, oh, yeah, I remember this stuff from back when it happened, and I remember it being a nightmare. But I still hated the documentary.
Because
specifically because there was one part.
Did you hate the documentary or like?
I hated both because the documentary made me mad. Because like there was one part where this girl was like, "We have all of these angsty white dudes, we have all these angsty white dudes, and nobody's asking why they're so angry." When literally we ask that of white dudes every year. Like nobody gives a shit anymore why white dudes are so angry. Fuck them. Then the other part I had an issue with was Moby talking about how, like, Moby bloviating about misogyny when his ass is a fucking creep who was creeping on Natalie Portman when she was a teenager. Like, fuck you, dude. Like, fuck this.
I can't stand Moby. I really like...
Yeah, and also, like, there were some things that Moby said that I, like, agreed with, but, like, the back of my mind, I was just like, homie, word on the street is you don't like to use condoms, yay. So...
My guy, look at yourself. Look, you know that insight? Turn that inward. Like, what the fuck, my guy?
Yeah, because there's this one part where he's talking about nu metal, and he's like, well, it's like they took, you know, the syncopation and, you know, whatever, from hip-hop, but they kept the misogyny and homophobia, and I'm just like, so, are you saying misogyny and homophobia is inherent to hip-hop culture, my guy?
Because as somebody who is... a lover of classic rock and classic rock groupie culture, bitch.
Hello. And racist.
Oh my god. And racist. Oh my god. Like,
she was mad misogynist.
Like, I agreed with Moby that, like, in his perspective of, like, as soon as you walked into, like, the Air Force base that it was held on, like, you could feel, like, the tension and stuff like that. Like,
the vibes are off.
Yeah, like, the vibes are off.
I can believe that, but I also think, because Moby's a self-centered dick, that he was more mad about
his name wasn't on the plywood.
Right, and that's why he was like, "Oh, I don't think he actually got the vibe. I think he was just mad about that, and then used
part of that bad vibe,
right? And then used that to be like, "Oh, I'm getting out of here," so he could feel like I don't fuck.
Does anybody like Moby?
No, it's fine.
Yeah,
we don't either.
Right.
And it was so funny to me because he's like looking at the board with all the band names on it. He was like, "I don't even know these people." And I'm looking at it, I was like, "I know that band and that band and that band."
Yeah. He's like, "Buck Cherry." And I was like, "I know who Buck Cherry is. I had like one hit, but like, I know who Buck Cherry is." Like, calm down, movie.
I do wish they had that little more like tying together of some threads. Because I do like seeing where they're trying to put the context of politics and everything.
Mm-hmm.
With the music culture of the time, but I felt we could have done a little bit more. This led directly to this, you know what I mean? Because for me, I was like, oh,
yeah,
these are definitely folks who would have been at the Death of Disco stadium thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 100%. Some of these dudes were probably at, like, the January 6th insurrection. Like,
yeah.
Like dead ass. Like, come on.
Oh man, they probably were.
There's, like, you can see like the straight like nu metal fan to like alt right white supremacist pipeline. Like, it's like right there.
It is right there.
Like, if you were a fan of nu metal back in the day, I'm not saying you're white supremacist. I'm just saying look to your brethren. See where those dudes are.
Look at the person on your left.
Look at the person on your right.
Look to the person on your right.
But, like, yeah, like, and it's just, like, it was, because they brought up Woodstock 94 and how Woodstock 94 mm-hmm. went right. Like, it rained.
To the point where you never even hear about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Like, you know, like, I didn't even know there was a Woodstock 94. Because I was all mm-hmm. of 9 years old when it happened.
I vaguely remember Woodstock. I was 8. I was 7 going on 8. So I vaguely remember it. I think I probably only remember that Cranberry song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, but, yeah, so I had, like, no recollection or memory that there was a Woodstock 94. And, like, so I looked up the set list or who was performing or the acts for Woodstock 94. And it was, like, 3 days, so August 12th to August 14th, and it was, like, I'm not gonna go through all of them, obviously, but, like, Blues Traveler, and Live, and Del Armidi, and King's X, and Sheryl Crow, and Collective Soul, and the Violent Femmes, and stuff like that. They also had a rave tent at Woodstock 94 as well. So it's, like, Apex Twins, D-Light, like, you know, stuff like that. Joe Cocker, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Nine to Snails, Metallica, Aerosmith, Melissa Etheridge, like, you know, stuff like that. And then, who the hell invited John Sebastian? I mean, I know why you invited John Sebastian and Gil Scott-Heron, but, okay.
One of the things I did like in the documentary was, like, they kind of put a juxtaposition of, like, all three of the Woodstocks. Like, they put a juxtaposition of the original one, the one in 69. And they were like, everybody thinks it was like this big peace-loving thing, but it actually was kind of dangerous and people did get hurt and people did get sick. And like, the military had to come up and airlift people out. It got so bad.
I wish they had talked a little bit more about that because I was like, wait a
minute. Yeah.
I remember hearing, about that. So here's the thing. I just recently realized that I was way more into music than most kids were. Because a lot of the stuff that people are like, oh my god, this is like shocking information is stuff that I knew already. But yeah, Woodstock 69 was like,
it was almost a shit show.
Yeah, but people remember it under nostalgia, and because of a, like they said, like there was a documentary about it and people think it was all love and flowers
and people just rocking out, and it was like, never mind the fact that they shut down a small town for almost 2 weeks. The people who were going to Woodstock, most of them could not get in because it was backed up for days. Like, literally, the street was literally backed up for days. People could not move. There was a shortage of water, a shortage of food. Like, everything that possibly could have gone wrong in Woodstock 69 did. People died. Like, there was, like, one or two births, But like, I think it was like 3 or 4 people that died at Woodstock 69. And like, it rained and it was muddy. And like, and yeah, but because of the movie Woodstock, because of the documentary Woodstock, and it's like, it's this looking back on the lens of nostalgia, people think it was like, oh, it was like 3 days of peace and love. Was it, girl?
No, it was not. But like, they do show the juxtaposition of like, 69 and then like 94, where it was like bad stuff happened in 94 and people probably did get very hurt because it did rain and it was very muddy and things like that. But 94 was more of a music festival as we would think of it today, and not like a shit show. Yeah. And also like there was a whole different culture of music happening then. Like they were like, it was in the middle of grunge culture, where you have dudes, specifically white dudes, who are starting to actually talk about and understand and give a shit about like feminism and queer rights and things like that.
Yeah, because you also have more visibility of like women and queer people in music. Not outright, not like as bold and as like in your face as today, which is a good thing. But it was like, you know, because there were always been gay people in music, but they were starting to like front bands and be a little bit like, you know, more like, I'm gay, deal with it. Like,
yeah, but like that was super, super interesting. And so like they get into talking about like the acts that they had booked for Woodstock 99 and being like, I don't understand how we didn't realize these things were going to happen because of the kind of people that we booked for this. But like some of the bands, Limp Bizkit were a bunch of dick. Fred Durst specifically, because he was the one talking.
Talking cash shit.
A lot of the other bands were like, hey, can y'all
Offspring and Korn.
This is supposed to be fun.
And also Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, last night, they were the last act of
the
last
Red Hot
night.
Chili Peppers incited that shit. That was a dick move. But I also can understand why the Offspring and Korn would be like, hey, don't do that shit. Because, one, the Offspring is a much older band than people realize. They've been around since the 80s.
Yeah. They were older when they were in their mid-30s when they shot to prominence. Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, like, they were here. They've been around through, like, I don't want to say post-punk.
Post-punk, new wave, the tail end of new wave.
Right. They were... Probably, I want to say, like, the prototype of, like, the 90s era punk. Not quite pop punk,
yeah.
But not quite OG punk.
Yeah, yeah.
They're proto-punk, proto-skater
punk.
Yeah,
yeah.
But, like they'd been around for a long time. And then, quiet as it's kept, the main guy from Korn.
Jonathan Davis, yeah.
Jonathan Davis is... Jonathan Davis was Jonathan Davis is a queer kid who didn't realize he was a queer kid, if that makes sense.
It makes sense.
I feel like that only makes sense to queer people.
That makes sense. He's also like he's also a white dude with dreads. I'm just like, homie.
Yeah, but that's gross. but there were a lot of bands who were trying to like get people to chill out.
Yeah,
but like. Everybody was there to see Limp Bizkit because it was during that time that Limp Bizkit was literally the shit. No, here's the thing. People loved Limp Bizkit. Like, the Limp Bizkit shot up into, like, everybody's favorite band.
Like, I remember.
And then fell off just
yeah,
this quick.
Like, I remember.
Like, it was like a 2-year period where, like, it was like, boom, everybody liked Limp Bizkit. And then, like,
They were gone.
I think they were declining, and then the guitarist left,
uh-huh.
The guy who used to wear all the weird paint.
Yeah.
And then, like, after he left, it was just like nobody heard from him.
He was keeping the band together, and then he was like, I'm out.
What am I about? But everybody was there to see Limp Bizkit and Fred Durst, like... And then this is another thing that we have to get into. Fred Durst did instigate a lot of stuff. However, the promoters of this whole festival can eat
dicks.
They can
talk about how much we hate.
Oh my god!
So
like the dude who organized like the original Woodstock 99 when he was a young kid, like he, you know, he was looking at it very much through rose colored glasses and like, and just like, oh, this is going to be fun. And stuff. I'm not like absolving him of responsibility at all, but he was just like, oh, it's going to be great and fun. And da 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 da. It was like, but also like, again, not owning up to and admitting all the shit that went wrong in 69. And how that easily translated to 99 with more space and less hospitable, like environment.
A less hospitable environment, the weather was even worse. I the one thing that the documentary did touch on, they were like, or one of the people who had actually gone to Woodstock 99 was like, well, it was an ego boost for that guy in particular, because like the other guy who also worked on Woodstock 69. She was like, it was an ego boost for him. It's an ego boost for him because he felt like everybody should have the experience that he had during Woodstock, not understanding
times
that
change.
These kids don't even know what Woodstock is. None of these kids were alive when it happened. Not a single one of them. So they have no idea.
And some of their parents might not have been alive. Like, depending on, like, we'll be looking at, like, the media, like the younger people who attended Woodstock. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, like, Michael Lang was looking at it, was just like, you know, every 5 years to have one, so kids coming out of high school can experience this, can experience, like, this big music festival. So he was very much kind of like, oh, this should be, like, you know, like a thing. And it's just like, and Michael and, like, the other dude, John Scheer, can fucking eat rocks. Like...
Yeah, John Scheer can absolutely eat rocks and fall to the bottom of the ocean. And I don't care.
Yeah, he was a nightmare. So basically, if you haven't seen the documentary, John Scheer refuses to acknowledge that anything... refuses to take accountability for anything that went wrong.
Anything.
The plumbing went bad... they were charging a whole lot for water. Like, okay, so the thing about the water thing, right?
Yeah. So, well, see, they were charging $4 for water, right, in 1999. $4 for water in 2001 money is $6.
In 2021, that's still high for water.
Mm-hmm.
For a small singular bottle of water. This is not some big-ass, like Irish Spring bottles of water you could get from Costco. No. This is that fucking, like, Nestle, like, whatever their fucking water brand is called. Like, them little people bottles of water.
The little round ones. The little round ones.
Yeah. And the security guards took food and drink off of people who came in the place.
Yeah. But drugs, let that shit in.
And John Scheer blames, like, all the bad press on MTV.
And like, and that irritated me.
As if these things didn't
happen. Like that irritated me.
No, the thing with the water, like he said, like they were talking. He tried to play it off and be like, oh no, there was plenty of water for everyone. We had fountains and stuff for everybody. Blah blah blah. But like,
you cut to somebody saying, just like the lines were long. You get up there, and people were bathing in it,
bathing in the drinking water because the showers they just had like a tarp up with water going.
Yeah.
And all of these dudes are fucking creeps anyway, so like
dudes didn't feel safe going to the showers,
and the drains were so backed up they said the water was from like your shin to your ankle.
And somebody just busted the pipe because they were just like, I just need water in my body.
And then that water ended up flooding camp areas. Yes. And then also the porta potties were backed up.
Yeah. And so people rolling around in mud and shit because nasty.
Why would you roll around in anything that looks like mud near a porta potty? That's gross.
I saw everybody come around.
Maybe they were like, you know, pigs roll around in mud.
I mean, some people were probably so hot, really they were hot just out. Like, I need to cool the fuck off. This is cold.
Hot and dehydrated.
Hot and dehydrated. This is cold. I'm trying to keep the sweat in my body.
Now you got sepsis, though. That's gross.
Then also, every time I saw somebody covered in mud,
pink eye,
dysentery. And I was, every time I saw somebody, I was like, "Ooh, that's gonna be a bitch of ringworm infection." Oh, girl.
I just know that place stank to hell. Oh, my God.
That's what everybody said. Everyone was like, oh, it smelled even by Friday, by the first day, it smelled terrible.
Mm-hmm. And this guy's walking around with a gas mask, some kind of mask. And he's like, these things are worth their weight in gold. And I was like,
if you only tell me.
Flash forward to 22 to 21 years later. what was I going to say? Oh, the John Shear guy. So, like, one of the in the documentary, what they do is they actually show video of, like, the meetings that they were having about the things that were going on during the festival.
Yeah.
Like, briefings. And people were bringing up, like, really valid concerns about safety and health and things like that. And
accessibility to stuff.
Right. And literally anytime somebody brought something up, he would basically talk over them and talk them down and be like, well, if you think it's so bad, why don't you come do better? Instead of actually listening and
you
trying
can do
to
better.
Fix the problem.
It was like, so this is your event.
And then even in the documentary, like, they just film him, like, where they have him sitting down talking. To this day, he's just like,
in 2021.
Oh. Right. Yeah. To this day, he's just like, oh, well, if they would have did this, they would have, they should have did this, or this person did this. Doesn't take accountability for anything.
Yeah. And it's also,
say who, sir? This is your event.
All this falls on you at the end of the day. Your name is attached to this, ho.
Hello.
And these tickets
Why
were not.
Why do you think you're in this chair right now, guy?
And these tickets were not cheap. These tickets were $180.
In the 90s.
In the 90s.
In 1999.
1999 money. What is that, like, 230 in today's
I'm about
money?
To find out right
if
now.
Not 250? 250?
$287.
Gee, get the fuck out of my face. Get the fuck out of my face.
I mean, it's to the point where
I'm not spending that much money.
I was about to say the exact same thing. I'm not spending $280 outside in the hot, hot heat.
With all of these white men?
No.
In the hot, hot heat. And that's just heat. It's hot, hot heat.
Yeah, I mean, July.
In the middle of July. On essentially a tarmac.
A tarmac, yeah. It's exactly what it is.
Yeah, because they had the festival.
An abandoned
on,
Air Force
cause
base.
In the 90s, a lot of Air Force bases got shut down. And so, like, that was one of the ones that shut down. And the mayor, like, they had the idea of bringing the festival there. They wanted to put the festival there so they didn't have to build a whole lot of new infrastructure. Stuff would already be there. Even though Woodstock was a... It was supposed to be about peace.
But it's on an Air Force base.
Well, they were like, well, right, they had whatever. That whole idea of melting your swords into, I don't
whatever.
Know.
Whatever.
The tar pits or something.
And so, like, the mayor was like, oh, this will be good because, you know, like, the mayor and everybody in town were excited about, like, the tourism aspect of it. Because since the Air Force base left, a lot of people lost jobs, a lot of people left, you know, so, like, it had an effect on the town. And so, like, they get into this thing thinking it's going to be a boon for their town, and then it's
mayor,
being a nightmare.
4 days in the middle of July on a tarmac, very, very little access to water. Like, water's at a premium. The free water provided, people are literally just popping a squat in. So it's not, you know, not filtering that shit out.
Not at all.
So, like, people just up here with their Dove and their Irish Spring soap just bathing.
Oh, God.
Just bathing.
And if you didn't hate John Shear already, you know, one of the things that was happening with Doc 99 is there were lots of women taking their tops off.
Yeah.
Like, just, you know, whatever. And he blamed the women for any sexual assault that they experienced. You know, he's like, well, maybe they shouldn't have been dressing that way. He's like, I mean, they shouldn't have been touched, but, you know, if they weren't dressing that way, that probably wouldn't have happened.
Which is really irritating because, like, there were girls as young as 14 who were assaulted.
Whose parents let them go thinking this was going to be, like, a safe thing for them to go to because it's Woodstock 99. And, like, and those girls were probably fully clothed and were still assaulted. Like, it doesn't fucking matter. And also, I'm surprised more people were naked because it was, like, 110, 115 degrees.
And it's also legal in New York.
And it's legal in New York.
You have to be topless.
And you're surrounded by asphalt on all fucking sides. I'm surprised more people weren't buckyballs naked. Shut up.
I was like, oh, let's find this John Shear guy.
And I just want to talk. Just step outside real quick.
Fucking sucks.
I saw his LinkedIn profile.
Oh my god.
And he looks like the third result.
Yeah.
And his messages are locked.
Of course. Of course they are.
Oh yeah.
Of course they are. Like, and that was another thing about it where I was just like, I guess because I'm a person who has boobies, I'm just like, y'all can't be this excited about titties, y'all. Like, y'all can't be this excited about titties.
I mean, they do explain it's the whole era of Girls Gone Wild.
Yeah. Because people who are listening who were born in the 2000s and later, there was this, these porn, I use the term porn very loosely, this porn DVD...
No,
this porn DVD series called Girls Gone Wild, which if you stayed up past a certain time watching MTV or VH1, you would see commercials for. Sometimes back to back. That and like Time Life compilation CDs of love songs. But
oh yeah, the easy listening songs.
Yeah, that. But you would
Michael Bolton up the ass.
It's Celine Dion.
Like, yep. But you would see this commercial for Girls Gone Wild. It was like, it's mostly white girls. I don't remember ever seeing a black girl in the Girls Gone Wild. Like,
well, you know, I think it was Snoop Dogg who wanted to do that.
Yeah, he's probably.
Like, I
want to
make Girls Gone Wild for black women. Like,
no, sir. No one asked for that, homie. But, like, you know, it's girls taking off their tops and stuff like that. Or girls really, really drunk, showing their tits. I think, like, if you get, like, the actual DVD, it's like girls actually having sex. But long story short, the person who came with the whole thing is in prison now.
Shocker.
Because...
Well, because there was a drama. There was not a drama. There was like a big issue with that because it was a lot of it.
Yeah.
Was
and a lot of drunk girls being filmed and giving like consent and signing things under the influence of substances, which I don't think is legally binding.
No, it's very illegal.
Yeah. So that dude went to prison. So, yeah. Like, that's why we don't speak of Girls Gone Wild anymore, because all that shit was illegal. But, like, there was a time where, like, you were just being inundated with, like, white girls just, like, ass and tits out.
Yeah. And you can see this in What Mean Girls. Like,
yeah.
When they go to Regina's house, and her little sister is in front of the TV mimicking the Girls Gone Wild DVD.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, so it's fuck John Shearer every day, all day.
Every day, all day.
Don't let us see you in these streets, homie. It is 2021.
It's like,
you're doing that shit.
Are you, it's sir, we just want to talk real quick. Just come outside real quick. It's fine. We ain't gonna do nothing. We just want to talk.
One reviewer I read said he was standing up and screaming at his television because he was so infuriated.
Yeah, because...
Yeah, that dude sucks. Like, every dude, it feels like every dude involved in the entire thing sucked. But, like, that guy specifically, I was like, you enabled all of this and
nothing
you just
happened.
Act like nothing.
Yeah, because that one, disaster relief dude, like, he tells a story of, like, one of the EMTs, like, helping a girl who was sexually assaulted. And, like, and it was, this dude came out, and he was just like, don't let anybody near her. Like, he gave her his shirt because she didn't have clothes. And he realized, like, oh, she didn't have clothes because whoever did this to her, whomever did this to her, ripped her clothes off. And he talked to another EMT, and he was like, dude, they're just animals. Like, they're just savages. Mm-hmm. It was like, this happened at your event, homie. And you enabled this to happen at your event. And, like, and you hired security. Like, the peace patrol was useless.
I mean, they hired security by giving them the answers to the test.
Well, because a lot of people were... Right. A lot of the people that they hired were just joining the Peace Patrol. Dudes joining the Peace Patrol because they wanted to go to the concert for free.
Like, you know, they would get their shirt, they would get their credentials. They would either turn their shirt inside out, change their shirt, and just put their credentials in their pocket and just go into the crowd. So it's just like, oh my god, this was riddled. It was going to fail from the beginning just in the implementation of it.
It feels very much like Michael Lang is the dreamer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Oh yeah.
The guy who probably handles the relationships. And then John Shearer is the capitalist.
Yeah.
He doesn't give a fuck about anything but himself.
Yeah. He wanted to make money off of this and the Peace Patrol at the gate being informed and instructed not to let people in with food or drink to make that money. And he was just like, show up to a festival, you bring money. It was like, but all of my money. I was like, okay, but I don't expect to go to a festival and get price gouged for fucking water. Soda, beer. Yeah, like soda, beer, any of like the extra stuff, the stuff you don't need. Yeah, sure. That's going to be high. But fucking water, my dude. Fucking water.
Well, like the that same EMT guy was talking about how like
$4 for beer.
$4 for water or beer. $4 or less for beer. So, beer. Of course kids were buying, these 20-year-olds are buying beer, not realizing that the beer is also dehydrating them more.
Yeah, because beer is a diuretic. And you pee. And it makes you pee. It makes you pee a lot. So, like, yeah, if you try to be cost effective, it's just like, I'm gonna get this beer and I'm gonna go get this hot dog.
And they didn't even talk about how much the food might have cost.
In the 90s!
Especially because it's $4 in the 90s! That's expensive!
$10 personal pizzas.
You know they had $10 pizzas. Had $5 pretzels. $10 personal pizza. Not like a big pizza for the group. No. Like a small disc. Less, smaller than a Frisbee. Like the Murray Steakhouse. Mm-hmm. Like small pizzas.
So one of the other things that they talked about was like the lineup for the show.
Yeah.
Which was another way that the John Shear pissed me off. Was like the lineup, yeah. They literally only had three women the entire time.
Jewel, Sheryl Crow,
Alanis Morissette,
and
like the guy tried to be like, oh, we just picked you because like you had talent and charisma to like command 300,000 people on stage, yada yada yada. And then somebody else pointed out, was like, oh, it's almost as if they did it on purpose because the three women weren't even all on the same night. It was one Saturday, one Friday, one Saturday, one Sunday.
Yeah, like where is it? Like, there's the West stage and the East stage. Sheryl Crow was on the East stage. And also, the stages were a mile apart from each other. So there was the main, I think the main stage was the East stage. And the others, and like the smaller acts were on the West stage. So, like, that big stage, I think it was the East stage. And they were a mile apart on this huge Air Force base. And, like, and you had to, like, essentially, like, throw them bows to get through crowds of fucking people just to get from one side to the other. And like, if anybody's ever been to a festival, you know, if you're trying to see an act, you're trying to be front row for that act, you stay in that place the whole time. So you're in this one position waiting for your act, and everybody knows like the main acts don't come on till the sun goes down. So you have people getting up there, like waiting for the acts I want to see all day.
Well, they did have the diary of the one guy. Spoiler alert: the guy dies, but like you can kind of tell that was what's going to happen because they're interviewing his friend and then they're reading passages from his diary. So immediately I was like, "Oh, that kid died." But he had specifically wanted to see Metallica.
Metallica.
Metallica was his band. He was like, I'm saving up my energy for the pit because I'm going to see fucking Metallica.
Right, and so, like, he, they go through, like, the different acts that he saw in the diary. One of his little comments about, what was it, the refugees? Where he was like, my mom told me if I can't say something nice, don't say something at all. Which, very much,
it really
it's
is.
Peak oh, 90s
that
white
made me
dude,
so mad.
Where it's like, I have no reason to dislike this band. They're just not my thing, but they're Negroes. Right. So I fucking hate this band.
And it's like, it's...
That's peak Fuji, my guy.
Yeah. That's peak Fuji.
And like...
It's White Club Jean. Like, I might have issues with White Club Jean being fucking greased up on a... Being greased
don't
up on a fucking motorcycle.
Up,
but...
we're erasing that from our memory. Moving on Violent. From that particular thought.
D is so close to ripping off her head to be like, I'm out.
But like, they go through his diary, right? And then like, he finally gets to see Metallica. And like, the guy, his friend was telling the story about... I did like the way that they set this up. Because his friend was telling the story about you know... He was, like, they were there to go see Metallica. The friend, Metallica was not his deal, but, like, it was his friend's deal, so he was gonna, like, stay as much as he could. And the friend was like, no, if you don't want to be here, you know, you can leave.
Go,
and so
it's fine.
He was like,
yeah.
I don't know how many people I pushed through, but I got out of there. And like the way he said it, because like they don't bring up the fact that guy died until they start talking about like all the medical issues that were going
stuff.
On. So this is like earlier in the documentary, but like I could tell by the way that he said that it was like, oh, that was the last time you saw your friend.
Yeah. Him telling me, he's like, I'll be fine. He was like, oh, I'll be fine.
And
go
again,
ahead, I'll be fine.
This is 1999. Mm-hmm. Nobody's got cell phones. If you have a cell phone, there's no signal out there.
Because you're so no far internet. Out. And like, and there's like, at the venue, like, at Woodstock 99, there was like a people finder board. Like, where you would like put up a message, and hopefully your friend, if they walked by, would check it, if they were looking for you. It was just like, if you see this, meet me here, like, at this time, like, if you happen to see this, like, so people were losing each other. Like, if people were just like, yeah, I brought my friend, he's 65, I don't know where he is, like, I came here with three dudes, only been here an hour, lost
them.
Well,
because it was an entire, like, city full of people in this one space.
Yeah. And nobody knew which way was which. Like...
And so, like, then they're actually talking about, like, all of the medical issues that they were having. And, like, the EMT guy talks about it, how he was, like, a lot of the times kids came in and it was, like, they felt like crap and they didn't know why. And it was just that they were dehydrated. So, like, literally, we were doing thousands and thousands of just getting people out of there.
Transports.
Just getting people out of there because they were dehydrated and we would have to get them rehydrated.
Yeah, like that one dude was just like, he went to go see Korn. He was like, I want to be so close for Korn. He was like, he's sitting there and he's like, I started to feel weird. I was like, I'm cold. Why am I cold? It's like 110 degrees. Why am I cold? And it just occurred to me, was like, oh, I'm experiencing hypothermia.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit. So he has to, like, feeling this way, has to get out of the crowd.
To try and get to a medic.
Try to get to a medic. So I'm assuming he found help.
Well, because he's still alive.
Like,
because he's alive.
Yeah, because he's alive.
But like, with particularly the guy who's journal that they go through the whole time, like, when he stayed for Metallica. Apparently, he passed out either in or near the mosh pit because he had wanted to go to the mosh pit so bad. Also, bad mosh pit etiquette for the entire thing. Like, usually, like, if there's a mosh pit, like, if people stumble in or if people get hurt, like, you're supposed to,
there's
usually like a bunch of dudes who are big as hell going, hey, don't hurt people who are like incapacitated, and they'll like shove people out of the way and get you out somewhere safe. But because it's freaking Woodstock 99, nobody's doing that shit. he passes out somewhere either in the pit or near the pit, and the medics got to him, and he probably had hypothermia or dehydration, but they treated him like he was a drug addict. And so they said his body temperature was super, super high, and they still administered paddles on him, even though his temperature was
high.
Which is
the wrong thing
to do. That's just
going to
make it worse.
Yeah. They essentially, like, kind of worsened it, and it sounds like they kind of induced a heart attack.
Or a stroke.
Yeah, or a stroke. And so, like, and the story is, like, really sad because you relate to it in the way that his friends are looking for them and they're getting increasingly frustrated and annoyed. They're just like, where is he? Like, because, like, he was like, he said he was going to be here. He's not here. Like, you're looking all over. Like, so you're getting mad and you're frustrated because you're hoping that it's not the worst thing you can think
of. And because for a lot of the dudes there, this place wasn't that dangerous. Like, it was, it's that thing where, to dudes, it's rowdy. But, like, to literally anybody else, this is clear and present danger.
This is violence.
Violence everywhere.
Yeah.
We need to get out.
Yeah. Like, and that was sad, because, like, that didn't have to happen. Like, it didn't have to, like, just seeing the aerial shots, I was just like, that is so many fucking people.
But, like, you can have...
That is so many people.
But you can have... a festival that big. Coachella does it all the time, even though I'm not a big fan of Coachella, as it is now. Early Coachella was fun.
Yeah.
But, like, you can have that many people. You just gotta make sure that you are actually hiring real security guards or, like, paying attention to the safety of everyone. Ooh, that...
figuring out exactly what you need right. for as many people that should be there.
That
know,
was the thing that pissed me off. Another thing that pissed me off that John Cher said was for the Woodstock 94, he was really upset because at some point people broke the fence, which is a festival. People break the fences at festivals all the time. People used to do that at early Coachella all the time. But like you...
Yeah. And that's built into like
right,
the revenue.
You know that...
Like you build in loss of revenue.
And so like people broke in for 94. And so like his big thing was like, I want to make sure that nobody breaks in because I want to make sure that we, you know, make money off of this, blah, blah, blah.
That we get as much money as fucking possible.
Yeah. And that's how you knew. That's how you knew this motherfucker was shit.
It's like, and like, so it's no wonder, like, even though, like, it sucks and it was fucked up, like, it's no wonder people started kicking down the walls.
Yes and no. That was all white dude aggression. Because, like,
you even
see, like, there were, like, the two white dudes who were just standing there talking to the news that were being, like, this, they were, like, this is just really dumb and disrespectful. Like, so many people...
People spent time on that wall,
and it's like a big art thing, and there was like a thing that to welcome us, and these people are just kicking it down, and it's unnecessary and it's wrong.
Yeah.
Shout out to the like four white guys in the whole documentary that weren't douchebags.
Right? Like, and I'm watching this thing, it's just like, I'm not...
Because the community had worked on that.
Yeah. It's painting the shit. It was cute. Oh, God.
It was like, and that's why I'm like... With all the dudes who were like, you know, the show us your tits signs and this, that, and the other. Like, Rosie Perez comes on stage and they're like, show us your tits. And I'm just like, calm down. Yeah. Like,
she couldn't get through the introduction of DMX.
Could not. Like, and I'm just like, y'all, it is just titties. I'll try to figure out while y'all are over here.
Let's rename the podcast. It is just titties.
Just titties. That's all it is.
It is just titties. Y'all over here acting like fucking crackheads. Try to see titties, and I'm like, and I'm pretty sure there were some dudes who were just like, oh, tits, cool.
Yeah, because I mean, even the guy's diary that they're going through, he's like, he almost says like,
I'm
okay,
over it. He was literally like, I'm like, it was fun in the beginning, but now I'm just like, okay, is this titties here?
Yeah, it's like, my boobie cup runneth over. Like, I've seen enough tits to last at least for the next year. Like, and so like, it's this, that whole thing of just like, there were probably reasonable dudes who were just like, I'm here to have fun. Cool, there are boobs. There's some naked chicks, whatever. But there's always the ones, and I think the shitheads outnumbered all the reasonable people.
Yeah,
who wanted to just like wreck shit.
And of course, you know, you have the active shithead, and then you have the shitheads who are just waiting.
Yeah,
to have the
who just waiting for some shit to pop off. Right.
And there tends to be a lot more of those. I feel like. than the ones who are, you know, going to take that first break. But then, because Rosie Perez is introducing DMX, and DMX comes out, and he does a song where it's called a response.
Yeah.
And the response is, nigga.
And a sea all of these white people.
Literally, like, they pan the camera out to the crowd, and it's like, most...
As white people,
there's
as
like
far as the eye
can
see.
Three black people in the entire crowd that I could see. And like some...
Chocolate chips and oatmeal.
Some of the white people they showed like didn't say it because they like, you could tell that they were like, this doesn't feel right. But the majority of them white dudes...
You could hear
strong,
it.
Loud.
Strong. Saying that shit from their chest. Like, I've been waiting for this.
Like, oh, finally.
Like, a whole bunch of white dudes busted a racist nut. Like, they were just ready.
And then, well, that journalist was like, well, he was like, well, because I wonder what it was like, because if you would have asked any of those dudes, like, if they thought it was okay for them to say the N-word, they would have been like, oh, it's not really okay, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, in 1999, them white dudes would have been
exactly.
What's no big deal?
Like, what is it like for, like, the black people at Woodstock 99?
Well, he told us, like, you know, we were doing call and response, like...
Those four black people.
Listen.
I feel real sorry for y'all. I don't know how y'all walked into that place and saw all them white people
turn
like,
around.
There's one, two, three of me?
It's like, I'll just be at $180.
Hey, y'all need a ride? Because we could get out
it's
of
like
here.
It's like on the megaphone. All the Negroes, if you need a ride, meet me at the front gate.
I got a van.
If you can hear me. Right.
The van will surely fit all of us.
It's only like 15 of us. If you need a ride back to the land of where white folks are not, let me know.
The land of where white folks are not.
Like, how, like, and I, like, as an alt black person, in terms of just, like, you know, style and what I listen to, like, I understand being a black person in all white spaces 99% of the time. It sucks. It sucks so hard.
It sucks, and then, like, every so often you, like, go to, like, a show or something and you see, well, I don't, well, and then also, like, the stuff that I go to nowadays is more fun and less aggressive, but, like, it sucks when you go to, like, it sucked when you went to, like, a show and, like, it was, like, all these white people and you had to be around, you could really only chill with, like, the white people you trusted. And then, like, there would be, like, if there were other black people there, it was black people that I knew that came with me because we were all into the same kind of music. Or it was, like, a stranger black person, but then when you went and talked to that other black person, they clearly reveled in being white people.
Bitch.
And then they were like real shitty to you for no reason.
I'm the token. What are
you
doing?
I used to get so mad. Because like anytime I was at a show and like another black person, especially if it was a black girl, came up to me and was like, "Hi, how are you?" I'd be like, "Hey, you're my friend for
tonight.
We
are here together. Let's make sure that we're safe. For tonight. We don't separate until one of us is on a train or a bus or in a car." Like,
we didn't come together, but we're leaving together.
Hell, the second to last concert I went to, it wasn't even like an aggressive band. It was like a goofy, fun band. And like the girl, like the other black girl that was there, there was more black girls at the second time I went, but the other black girl that was there for that one, right? Like me, her, and my sister, we all saw each other. We talked. My sister actually she's an artist, so like my sister actually like followed her on Instagram or whatever already, and so like we were talking or whatever, and then like for the rest of the night, like we were near each other, and like she would like be like, "I gotta go to the bathroom," and we were like,
like, because my friend, I probably cut this out, but like my friend Kyle and I, we met doing Rocky Horror, right? We were in a Rocky Horror Shadowcast together, right? And when we first met, it was really just like we had to size each other up. Like, are we going to be cool or are we going to be adversarial? Like,
do you like gross. Other Negroes? Like, yes or do no? You,
cool.
Yes? Okay,
like,
cool.
The black folk or are we going to have a problem? And it turns out we were 100% cool because we didn't expect to see another black person in this. We're like, oh my God. But, like, we went to a Rocky Horror convention, years later, like, after we both left cast for reasons I will explain later. And we saw this one black girl, and she was the black girl in the Rocky cast who tokened and who loved being the token black girl in the Rocky cast. And both of us, she was, like, saying all the stuff with attitude. We were just like, okay. Like, we were just like, girl, we are not your enemy.
We literally,
like, girl,
don't care.
Don't care if you want to be shucking and jiving for these white folks, do you, but just know there is nothing on the other side of that for you. So I suggest you get behind some people.
I like, that was my thing. Like, I was definitely a kid who like hopped around from I was friends with everybody. So like I hopped around in different scenes and luckily for me, it meant that I got to experience a lot of cool things because I had friends in these spaces that were like, "Oh yeah, come hang out with us. You like it. It's fun. Come have this experience," right? And like my major thing was like the people inviting me to this stuff are white people. I would like more black people to like, no offense, white people, like y'all are cool, the ones that I let stay near. But like I want more black people to come do this fun stuff with me.
Yeah, but like being a person who is all, and not even like in the traditional term of additional, the traditional definition of alt when it comes to music, as just somebody who was not into like larger black culture, especially in the 90s. Like finding other black people who were into the things I was into was really, really hard. And like so you find people who were interested in things that you're interested in, and they happen to be white people, and so like so you find yourself as the only black person with like a slew of white friends solely based on interest.
I was lucky. I found a lot of black friends that were also into like. But then again, When I was a teenager, like, we had lived out in the suburbs, and the thing that me and the other black kids out there who were into this alt stuff had in common was, like, all of us had, like, all of our families had moved us out there from LA because LA was getting, well, LA was pretty dangerous at the time. And so, like, we were into all of this stuff, but, like, a lot of us had gotten introduced to this stuff from our cousins in LA. And so, like, being in the situation where, like, you like this thing and now you have to go to these shows and stuff with white people was new and unfun.
Yeah. And, like, my friend Kyle, she is into, like, the glam metal scene. Because a lot of glam metal bands in the 80s still kind of tour now. And so she's in that scene and she dresses in and stuff like that. And, like, and she was so happy to find... oh my god, she always has a fit. I was like, god damn bitch, I have to have you start shopping for me because I have no style. But anyway, and she was just so happy to find, like, another black girl again who was not trying to fight her. She was like, oh my god, I think her name is Izzy, and, like, her and Izzy are cool. It's like, if they're at the same shows, they hang out together. Because, bitch, we didn't come together, but we're leaving together. I'm keeping an eye on you this whole fucking show. So I hope...
Make sure you make it to your person, because I
understand. So I'm hoping, like, the black people at Woodstock 99, the ones that stayed, the ones that didn't get in the van to go home.
the safety van.
Like, we call it
the Tubman van.
We're just chugging along to freedom. They were trying to keep track of, like, the black people that they could, but in a sea of that many people, it was probably damn near impossible.
Oh no, it was 100% impossible. But in all honesty, for those people, I'm very sorry that you had to go through that. I don't know. I never want to hear a sea of white people say the N word,
like, en masse
ever. Because that feels like it's itching for a lynching.
Yeah, no. Y'all outnumber us like 350 to 1.
Itching for a lynching.
not even 350. 100,000 to 1. I'm good. I'm leaving.
Like, the thing about it is, like, DMX on stage is fucking hype. He's, like, in his element. RIP DMX. And he commands the crowd, but it's just like, but you haven't.
But it's the wrong crowd, though, like, my guy.
It's the wrong crowd.
And I'm wondering, like, why is he doing it?
Yeah, what?
Like, is he just doing it because he can get them to say it? And be like, look at these assholes?
That's what the journalist, he was like, well, it's because he could have command, he could get the sea of white dudes to do what he says. But, like, I don't even think it was that. I think he was giving a performance and he wasn't thinking of the impact it would have.
So he was just doing, like, his set. And this song was in his set. It was just like, you could have just taken that out of the set, D, but it's okay. We all make mistakes.
Well, but to be fair, like, every DMX song's got the word nigga in it. So, like...
It's like the Rita Rainbow remix.
And, like, that's probably what he was thinking. Like, every one of these songs got the word nigga in it, so I might as well just do my fucking songs. And, like, I'm not mad at him... I'm not mad at him for that.
Yeah.
I think it was a bad choice.
It was a bad choice.
It was just a real bad choice.
Given the audience, terrible.
And but I wouldn't want to be around
at all.
Who, buddy, if I was in that crowd, the way I would have just walked the fuck.
Get off me!
I sent D that gif of the man from The Color Purple, the piano man.
Gotta go.
I was like, double time on that one, because I'm not saying war to anybody. I'm just turning around. Like,
dude came back for the second shift. Any Negroes left at Woodstock 99? The Tubman van is back. We have room and snacks.
and water. And we will take you to a clean bathroom.
You can get a shower. A shower. Meet me at the front gate.
Somebody's so making fast, a quilt to give you directions on how to get this done.
A Negro in tattered culottes, like, this way.
We got a French, We got a flat braid with MAP in your hair to get you the fuck out of there.
It's the one white ally who's just like, this way, this way.
Or just like, ooh, oh, I don't know.
I don't know where she went. Like, oh my god.
I was also disturbed by hearing Dave Matthews say
pity. Maria, did I send you?
I don't know. Did I send you? Why so many people like the Dave Matthews Band? They were never
Crashing
my thing.
To me is the only song I like.
Here's the thing. They have a really great sound.
Do they?
For a band that is black.
Do they?
If you listen to like covers of the songs with like a black singer, I guarantee you, you'd be like, oh,
oh
good.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. If like, if it was like, if a black singer sang those songs, I would probably like
Oh, my God. Like,
but
if...
it's David Matthews.
What's it? If Leon Bridges sang Crash Into Me, I'd be like, oh, yes.
I don't know.
That carried Dave Matthews.
Oh, Maria, did I send you that TikTok about like the day that Dave Matthews' band tour bus dumped all that shit on that tour bus?
Yeah.
That tourist boat of people.
I don't understand. I don't. Dave Matthews band.
Like people who love the Dave Matthews
also,
band.
I think people tend to forget that Dave is from South Africa.
That doesn't explain why he's
like, Oh, no. That has nothing to do with that. But
I'm very sorry to anybody that likes Dave Matthews Band. That was rude of me to say that his music sucks. He's a very talented musician, whatever.
Mea culpa. It's just like, but like people who are into the Dave Matthews Band are like into the Dave Matthews Band. They're all,
I mean, as a kid, I liked the singles.
Yeah, like it's the same level as like Deadheads and like Fish fans. Like they are devoted.
Yes,
they're devoted. If not the same,
no matter what.
Like,
I get it.
I had a.
Now. It's a fandom.
Oh, yeah.
It's you're not. It's not fans. It's a fandom. Like y'all are okay.
Yeah,
I had a teacher
in high school who was a Fish fan. And she would, like, tell us stories about when she followed around Fish for a summer before going to college.
I don't think I've ever heard of Fish.
Me either. But they, like, yeah, people fucking love them. People fucking love Fish. Jam bands, man.
But apparently, one thing they didn't cover on the documentary is that ICP was there.
St. Clown Posse.
Mm-hmm.
Known to make everything better. And what they did...
It's like, wait a minute, hold on.
Well, no, I'm not here to defend Juggalos in the least bit.
In defense of the Juggalos.
But I feel like Juggalos, at the very least, take their white dude aggression and point it towards not being total shitheads. Like, they want better things for everybody. They're just, a lot of them aren't the brightest people in
like,
the world.
Like, I have a friend who's a Juggalo, and he's a good guy.
And their band is weird.
Well, see, what they did was, they... threw $100 bills into the audience.
I believe it.
And of course, it was chaos.
Of course, it was.
And and you know how expensive everything was.
Yeah,
people were like food and water. And apparently, I actually saw this right now. The personal pizzas were $12.
Oh my god! In '90s money. What in the 1990s? In the 1990s,
just about $20 today.
Suck that.
When I was in middle school, we used to go through that a la carte line and get a pizza for like $1.50. You get a pizza, breadsticks, and a soda.
Were you seeing ICP, ma'am, during lunch?
No. We saw Alien Ant Farm because that's where they were from. No, I'm just kidding. That is where they were from, but we didn't see them. Shout out to everybody from the Inland Empire. We all know that place sucks.
But, like, yeah, like, I have no problem with ICP. Like, I have a friend who's a Juggalo. Like, he's a good dude. Like,
they're just weird as hell.
Also, but Juggalos are, like, you know, they're just out here. They're just out here being Juggalos.
I respect that more than the Dave Matthews Band.
The Juggalos have commandments. What the fuck do you have, Dave Matthews?
They have a life's purpose.
This is gonna be Woodstock 99 and Dee hates Dave Matthews.
That'd be the title. title of this episode, What's Up 99, aka D really hates Dave Matthews Band.
They're not my thing. I don't
hate his fans.
I don't hate Dave Matthews or his band. I just don't like people trying to convince me that it's the best band ever when there are literally any other bands out there that you could be listening to. But it's, sorry, mea culpa.
That's going to be the thing. It's like every time we say it, unpopular opinion, it's like, mea culpa. Okay, so like on July 24th, 1999, which is the Saturday... They fucking had Ice Cube?
Yeah. What?
They had a shit ton of people. I mean, like, everybody who was anybody was pretty much there. Unless you were a woman.
They had a lot of people.
Unless you were a woman.
The thing about it is like, the lineup sounds pretty dope, as far as music. Aside from the fact that they did not have women. Yeah. Like, they had, like, three women. But the lineup didn't actually seem, like, that bad. Like, it was a good spread of music.
Mine was dope. Yeah,
if it's just like a regular music festival.
Right.
Like, which it wasn't.
Because somebody said, one of the people was like, there's no way in the world that you would have a festival like this and have somebody who's going to be there for, like, I'm trying to think of it, literally any of the bands, but would also be there for, like, Moby and then also be there for Ice Cube, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, people are allowed to listen to more than one genre of music.
They just don't typically
convene in the same place.
Put these guys in the same ticket.
Yeah.
That's not true, though. Because, like,
in 1999?
In the 90s, there were a lot of, in the 80s and 90s, there were a lot of rock bands who toured with rappers because they liked the music.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
Because,
like,
a lot of the times their fans were dicks about it because white people. Because,
like, didn't, like, Public Enemy and, what's that band?
Aerosmith?
Uh-uh. No. That was Run DMC and Aerosmith.
Oh, that's Run DMC.
It was like a metal band. One of the members is married to Meatloaf's daughter. Oh, I'm blanking so hard right now. But they did like a track together. I think they toured together.
Well, Ice-T toured with a couple bands, I think. But like,
yeah. Well, Ice-T has he has Body Count, but like,
oh yeah, and then yeah,
that's a rap metal band.
He also has Body Count, but like, it's not as weird as people think. People want it to be weird for basically racist ass reasons. Music is still pretty segregated.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm.
But it's still kind of weird to see like Jamiroquai and Korn and Bush on the same ticket.
I'm gonna say no on that. And here's why I'm going to say no, because they brought it up in the documentary. Like, that is the TRL era.
True.
Right? And true. So TRL was 17 different genres of music.
That's very true.
And like...
Oh, TRL.
And like, you would get a bunch of different kinds of... You would get all different kinds of music in like 1 hour, 2 hour set.
Yeah. You would literally get like Britney Spears next to Korn, mm-hmm. next to Limp Bizkit.
And I will say this, they actually talk a little bit about the backlash that Carson Daly got. Because Carson Daly is also like he was like a music journalist. Like, he's a dude that liked music, right? Like, regardless of genre. And like, he got a lot of shit for TRL.
For doing his job. Like, I don't feel any way about Carson Daly, like, East or West. But I was just like, but the way they framed it was just like, the man got a job and he did the job. Mm-hmm. That was his job. His job was to host TRL. That's what he did. And you're looking, and it's also that, as they brought up in the documentary, it's also that whole thing of just like, these white boys were upset that MTV was being taken over by like their little sisters, by pop.
Right.
And I was just like, but music shift and change.
Right.
Like, if you look at the implement, because I think we just passed like the 40th anniversary of MTV airing for the first time. And like, you see MTV, and it was like, there was a moment in time where there were not black people on MTV.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
not even Michael Jackson.
And David Bowie had to get MTV's ass.
And Michael Jackson.
Just like, where are the black people?
Michael Jackson. Well, because David Bowie actually liked black people. But Michael Jackson was like, people always compare artists to Michael Jackson, not understanding that Michael Jackson was huge.
Yeah.
Like, he was unprecedentedly huge.
The biggest star.
The biggest star.
Like, it was like him, Elvis, and the Beatles are like...
Top tier.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Like, no one man should have all that power.
Right.
Like...
Yeah. And even he wasn't on MTV.
Yeah.
And then when they started putting him on MTV, they were mad about it.
Yeah. Upset about it. And like... and I'm a Queen fan, so I've watched like a bunch of Queen stuff. Love but Queen. Like the drummer Roger Taylor was just like, you turn on MTV and it was White Snake, and bloody fucking White Snake. Like that was all that was there. And it was just like, you know, people had to get in their ass, like, where are all the black people? And they started showing, like, Michael Jackson. Exactly. Started showing Michael Jackson, and they showed Herbie Hancock's Rocket video, but Herbie Hancock really isn't in the Rocket video mm-hmm. that much. Like, he's on the TV, but they pan that TV, like, real fast. Mm-hmm. And then you see, like, the shift over, like, to Run DMC and stuff like that, but it's still mainly rock. And then you get to a certain era of MTV where it's just, like, rap artists.
Well, that's a thing. Like when they started letting brown people on MTV, they were, like, it was, like, yo, MTV Raps. Like, you had a specific hour where the Negroes were allowed to have their
and
music.
Like, yo, MTV Raps was on for, like, 1 second.
We'll let Whitney Houston and other areas, but the Negroes got to be on Yo MTV Raps.
MTV Raps. But Headbangers Ball was on for like 6 hours.
It's so funny seeing. And then also, going back to the original point, like a lot of white dudes were mad that like pop was taking over MTV because MTV was supposed to be counterculture, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Which, yes and no.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of started out the way, but by that point, it was the culture.
Right.
It was the culture. I mean, so it can't be counterculture. You are right. The culture.
You have role rules and real world and the spring break, you know, whatever. And like,
yeah. And MTV spring break where they would go and they would like the dance parties they would have or like the grind. MTV's the grind. Remember the fucking grind? Like at 6 a.m.? Yeah, all the dating. Yeah. Singled Out. Oh my God.
Yeah. Whew, MTV has gone through so many changes.
Like they just show ridiculousness. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
But I think, since we're on the subject of MTV, I think MTV is dying.
Yeah.
Because it no longer, and I'll jump back to another thing in a second, but it's dying. Like, it no longer gets to set what the culture is because we have the internet now. And, like,
yeah,
the internet is a monster in and of itself and, like, basically people get to pick what the culture is instead of being told what the culture is.
Yeah.
More or less, because industries are figuring out fairly quickly how to manipulate the internet. But that brings me back to one of the things that I thought was funny was they actually in the documentary they bring up Napster. And how Lars Ulrich was like fighting so hard against it, right?
I mean, fuck anything. Lies. He sued Victoria's Secret.
Well, no, but here's the thing. The funny part about that for me is they had the guy who was the drummer in the band at the time, who like he was like, I don't want to say anything about Lars. I don't understand why Lars.
Oh yeah, Dave Mustaine.
Right, but he was like, but like, you don't you have enough money?
Enough money,
like. You're not doing this for the little guy, my dude. You have enough money.
Yeah, it was like, I have my issues with Dave Mustaine, but like Dave Mustaine was just like, but do you not have enough money, my brother?
You
have money. And like, that's when, like, when he was in this debate with Chuck D, and Chuck D was like, it doesn't bother me. It's like giving music back to the people.
Right.
Like, because like...
The big argument, because even as a kid, for me, I was like, I understand how it takes money out. It's a lot like the arguments of today. I understand how it can take money out of artists' pockets, especially like newer artists. But the industry should not be taking, like, the industry already takes way too much money from artists to begin with.
Yeah, 100%.
They can give some of that up and give it to the artists.
And seeing as how artists, unless they reach a particular threshold in album sales, like, most of their money they make from touring and touring merch.
Complete aside, but that's one of the reasons why during the pandemic, like, right? So, like, Megan Thee Stallion went through a whole bunch of shit, like, up to the pandemic and then the pandemic. Like, her mom died, then she got shot in the foot by that weird nigga, right?
Her grandma died.
And so, like, right.
Her grandma died.
Her grandma died. Was it her grandma?
No, so grandmother and her mother both died.
So she's also dealing with that lawsuit with her company where she's asking her distribution company to give her more money for her music.
Yeah.
And like, part of the reason why she's asking for money, more money, is she cannot tour. There's a whole ass there's a panaderia outside.
Yeah. There's a Ponderosa happening, homie.
There's a whole panacotta outside. She can't tour. So, like, yeah, she's going to ask the company that's distributing her, who she's making money for more money. It was just real sad. But anyway.
Yeah. As a super aside, like, I just read that, like, De La Soul just got their masters back.
That's the thing that makes me... That's the thing that upsets me, is, like, the fact that artists don't have their masters. That's a dick move.
Yeah, it's like, I don't like Taylor Swift. I have a friend who's a Swiftie, like, hardcore Taylor Swift fan. We just don't talk about it. But like, I'm not going to sit here and say that Taylor Swift does not deserve her masters.
Right.
That's her voice. That's her music. Like,
she wrote give that bitch her
fucking
shit.
Yeah, give her fucking shit. Yeah. But yeah, so anyway, back to the Woodstock 99. It's gonna be just like us talking about random musical shit that we know.
I think we've covered everything that was interesting about it.
Yeah, except for like the huge fire.
Right.
Yeah, well, white dudes got upset and started a fire at the end.
Like... Well, no, I mean, one of the things that I was like, oh my gosh, I really didn't know that, was that they got the fire from these candles that this group that was trying to influence gun restrictions and holding like a candlelight vigil for the victims of Columbine, because that was like 4 months earlier.
Yeah.
And that's where the candles came from.
Yeah.
And they just took that and
set some shit on fire. Like, it's already hot and you set fires? It's hot on a tarmac in the middle of July.
And how the police came in and just politely escorted everybody out.
Oh, yeah.
And the one dude was just like, oh, we were black.
He was like, people talk about white privilege, but like, that is a glaring example.
He was like, we literally set shit on fire. And we're just like, and just had a broom at our feet going, can you just go?
Okay, guys, fun's over.
Yeah, but they literally set that place on fire. Like, you could see, like, at the camera from the main stage, you could see there was, like, 7 or 8 different fires going.
Yeah, the fact that people had to flee.
Oh, yeah.
MTV had to flee because they, Viacom.
Yo, when Carson Daly said,
we can,
like, MTV and Viacom can no longer ensure your safety.
Yeah, and everybody was like, well, that means I'm out. Bye.
Wild. And this dude still blames them for everything.
I remember that, too. I was like,
what the fuck?
I remember that, too, because I remember them talking about it on MTV, about the fact that they, like, weren't going to be able to do the coverage anymore because they had to leave because it was so dangerous. And I remember being, like, flabbergasted.
I remember feeling like, that makes sense.
And John Shear is still blaming MTV, and I'm just like, no.
I could see this happening.
Yeah. Like, all of MTV had to pack up and beat feet, like, motor out of there. Like, tire tracks on the tarmac.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Fred Flintstone. Like, had to get the fuck out of there because they were afraid that they would be harmed. Like, if they got a hold of Carson Daly, they would have strung him up a tree. But, like, and Josh, you're still up here blaming MTV. I was like, no, MTV is not the problem. MTV was reporting what they saw and what was happening.
Right. Oh, they riled the out of
me. You can't get mad at them for reporting. How dare they report the true terrible things that happened here?
Like, and it was like, and I appreciate that everybody was just like, yeah, you got there, and you were just like, ooh, the air is off. Bad vibes.
Purposefully bad feeling. I just can't.
Yeah, it's just bad.
I mean, and not just like ignorance, like, oh, this is our first event. No, you definitely did not plan for this. You knew how many tickets you sold.
Yeah. You know how many people are going to be here. And like, you get that shot of like, it was so hot, people were under the trailers.
Passed out,
just trying to get respite from the heat. And if you've ever had a heat induced nap, you know that shit is hard as fuck to wake up from. And people just trying to, like, you know, people were sunburned.
Oh my god, yeah.
Crispy chicken. Crispy. Just out.
All of those white people.
Not a block of sunscreen.
All those poor people. They didn't have no unseen.
Nobody had sunscreen. No spray. Nobody had nothing.
They didn't have no
Sarah B. No banana boat. Nothing. They had Jack. And you know the person who...
Oh, those people had to feel like shit.
you know, if like, you know, people who did have the sunscreen, somebody found out and was like, let me get some of that.
And then you ain't got sunscreen.
They ain't got no sunscreen no more. The sunscreen was supposed to last me 3 days.
It got passed around and it was gone.
3 full days. I ain't got nothing. It was good.
But yeah, I have been to music festivals and they're not really my thing. People are too close together.
Yeah.
People are pushing and pulling. Yeah.
It was like, I love how Dave Holmes brought up the fact there's like, remember that point in like the late 90s, early 2000s where there was a DJ in every band and that was enough to sing, to like take up a place in a band? You would just hear ricket ricket every once in a while.
You want to know what? The DJ in, I feel like the DJ in Incubus makes mm-hmm. sense because he actually put sound, like he's actually putting
yeah.
sound and music in the song. He's actually like mixing into whatever song they're playing.
Yeah.
I want to say the same for Linkin Park.
He's also a producer.
Well, yeah, like, no. Linkin Park. He's also doing, he's also putting sound effects yeah. and he's a producer. But I don't understand why there was a dude in Limp Bizkit. Yeah. Why was just there a dude doing this?
Because he's like, oh man, we really like, you know, Tom is such a cool dude. And he's been a supporter since day one. And he just really wants to be in the band, guys. And we just have to think of something.
Like, and also, fuck Kid Rock. We didn't even touch on Kid Rock.
Nah, I didn't even want to talk about
Kid Rock. I have to think of something. Like, it was like Kid Rock's band, Limp Bizkit, Sugar Ray.
Even the dude in Sugar Ray actually put, like, sound effects in the shit.
Did he?
Yeah. They literally have a song where, like, part of the song was him and the guitarist battling noises, oh, okay. I guess. Like, he would play a sound, and then the guitarist would mimic the
a
sound.
A noise battle.
Right. Like, I'll give Sugar Ray more credit than I'll give fucking Limp Bizkit.
Like I said before, I will never forgive American pop music culture for making Limp Bizkit a thing.
God, and they were entirely too much.
They were such a thing. Like, I was just like, what is
white
happening?
White dudes thought Limp Bizkit was so fucking cool.
I thought they were so...
And I remember being like, why don't you just listen to rap music?
I can't relate.
It's too black. Negroes.
Nah, it's the Negroes. It's the Negroes.
And it was like, and everybody thought Limp Bizkit was so funny because their album was the hot dog, chocolate starfish and the hot dog flavored water.
So clever, you guys. It's so funny.
You just made a dick and ass joke. Wow. Wow. Even at like 15, I was just like, y'all are dumb. Y'all are so yeah, dumb.
I was very underwhelmed by that. I was like, okay.
Like, y'all think this is like the height of comedy. Wow. Like,
it's just a very sad era.
It was such a fucking sad era.
Because here's the thing. Nostalgically, I look back on the 90s and I go, most people when they look back on like other eras, they are like, oh my god, it was so corny, right?
Yeah.
But I'm like, nah, there's a lot of cool and interesting and valid things. Like the kids who are redoing the 90s now, I'm like, heck yeah, take whatever you think is fun from that and go wild with it. It was great in the 90s. I say as a person who was like a child in the 90s, but still. But yeah, go off, have fun, right?
Take the best of the Delia's catalog and make it worth work for you, because the rest of us had to suffer.
Oh, it just bugs me so bad. Like, they're like, oh yeah, I was watching something, and they were talking about like the new like cliques in high school, and you know, they're talking about e-girls and soft girls and all this other stuff, and they were talking about, oh gosh, I can't remember, like it's supposed to be the popular girl now, but it's different. I can't remember what it's called, but they were just like, yeah, they have scrunchies and puka shell necklaces. I was like,
whoa, puka shell necklaces made a comeback.
I was like
the choke, when the chokers made a comeback, I was like, oh shit, it's fucking 90s in here, bitch. They're gonna bring back butterfly clips. I don't know what I'm gonna...
Jinkos are selling,
oh my god, they already have
hundreds of dollars.
What?
Yes.
Wow, Billie Eilish wore them rave pants and y'all went fucking wild. You know what? Good on you, cheerins. Good on the kids. Enjoy
good
yourself.
Good on the cheerins.
Have fun. Do not bring Limp Bizkit back, though, children.
Don't
kids,
do that. And
children.
I think that's what's happening. I think that's what's
I don't
happening.
Think so. I don't think so. I'm not going to
let me
that,
tell you. Let
no.
me tell you who can stay in the 90s. Marilyn Manson, Kid Rock, Limp Bizkit.
Yep.
Let them stay there.
Yep.
It's not worth it.
Let them stay there.
Don't do it.
And thank you for joining us for our coverage of Woodstock 99. Dee, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter @NaughtyCoolJ. I also do a bunch of other stuff. But you can find out all about it on my Twitter at NaniCoolJ. It's just so much. I do the most, I'm sorry.
I'm just have so much to do. I'm so in demand.
It's not even that. It's not
I can't even. It's talk not about that. It.
It's not even. I'm so in demand. I'm so tired. I'm tired, y'all.
Maria, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at ValarMoreDollars. That's ValarMoreDollars. And also on the podcast Nerdgasm Noir with D.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Ephemeral Quiet. You can all, if you have any suggestions of what you want us to cover, you can email us at lccrossing@gmail.com. Yes, we're using our Lovecraft Country email because it is there and we still check it. And that will conclude this episode of Hodgepodge TV. Thank you guys for joining us. Bye.
Bye. See you next time.
Bye. Bye.
We hope you've enjoyed our mishmashed medley of miscellaneous entertainment. Your very online hosts can be found all around the internet. Follow Maria at ValarMoreDollars. Follow Megan at Ephemeral Quiet, and follow Dee at Nanny Cool J. Thanks for tuning in to Hodgepodge TV. Well, you'll never guess what we'll see next.